Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, we'll be talking about actions, attitudes, and rituals to support change. We all want to make changes in our lives, and there are certain times that it seems particularly significant. The beginning of a new year, a birthday, a move, something that happens inside or outside, which makes us think we need to make some sort of change. Well, how can we do that in a positive and nurturing way? Today in the studio, I have licensed clinical social worker, Caitlin Stecker. Good morning, Caitlin.
Good morning.
I'm so happy to have you here.
Yes.
Caitlin is in private practice here in Astoria, though she also travels extensively doing trainings for the internal family systems model, and we'll find out more about that in a moment. Caitlin, please tell the listening audience, those folks who are not familiar with you, a little bit about yourself and your work.
Well, I've been in private practice over 30 years, and before that I worked in residential treatment with kids and also ran an incest treatment program, a group program. And through the time, I've been training and studying just about, it seems, almost every kind of healing work or therapy that has been invented. And over these last years, I really became very committed to what's called psychodrama, which is an action way of working to have issues be able to be put into actual experience and action rather than just talking about it. And so I have a couple groups, two groups that have been going for 19 years, and people have come in and out of those groups, and there's also a number of people who have been in for quite an extended period that now see it as their spiritual support group and also just life support, having a tribe at their back. Also, in the last 15 years, then I became acquainted with and through my own healing process, very committed to what's called internal family systems or the PARTS model. And because of what I saw happening for myself in my own process of healing and then in the healing of others, I decided to work to be able to be a trainer so that I could share it with other therapists. And so in the last, I guess it's now almost 9 years, I've been traveling mostly in the West, but sometimes in other parts of the country as well, and training therapists, doing beginning trainings and then more extensive.
And that model, which actually the movie Inside Out, which is a great movie, if you haven't seen Inside Out, that's a classic forever and ever. That movie addresses a little bit the internal family systems model, which essentially is...
Yeah, it's really the idea that we are a multiplicity, each of us. And it's not a new idea. That's been around for thousands and thousands of years. And now being able to understand it more through actual brain science, that we are many different aspects of feeling and thinking and reactions. We are not just one mind. And so part of the sense of our peace and confidence and being able to live a satisfying life is in being able to have that internal family or internal system really be known and understood and supported by what we call the self. And self is the core center of each of us. There's a self in every person on the planet. And having that self be in the lead in our life is really what we work toward, is that it's the appropriate leader of our system. But for many of us, it's so covered over or occluded by parts that had to develop early in our life to help us be what we needed to be in our families or survive whatever was happening that felt overwhelming to us, that those parts have taken the space of self, and it's difficult then to feel or access that aspect of us.
And that's why, really, when people say, you know, I cannot decide, one part of me wants to do this and the other part wants to do that. But then what you talk about is that there are many different parts inside all of us. And and when they are in conflict, then it's very hard to know what direction to take in our lives.
Absolutely. And that's probably, I would say, the essential gift of this work is that so much of what people struggle with are these internal dilemmas or polarizations, we call them, between parts, where there are different aspects of us. And actually, just to say, there are no bad parts. There are only parts that are in some way trying to offer something that they believe we need or is essential for our survival, and or they're carrying wounds from the past that weren't fully metabolized and are kind of tucked away in some of our parts.
Well, okay, but let's say that there's a part that wants us to smoke, and we all know smoking isn't healthy. All right, so that part says, nope, want to keep smoking. And then there are the other parts of us that say, no, that's not healthy. I want to stop smoking.
Right.
So you have that conflict. Well, what is the part that keeps us smoking? What? How could that possibly be good for us?
Yeah. Well, this is what's interesting because, of course, often we do end up, and we're going to be talking about this process, we end up with parts that in our model we call managers, and they're the parts that want to keep us confident and competent and capable and living our life. They are preemptive parts. They keep us from getting hurt in ways we've been hurt before. And so they'll also develop goals and a sense of wanting to get us someplace different than where we are. And so, of course, yes, it's a very worthy goal to stop smoking for our health. However, if, and for most people, smoking began because it was meeting some need or eventually developed as meeting some need, if that's not connected with, if that part, which we call firefighters are parts of us that find something, and most of us have something, we kind of say a drug of choice or something that is where we go for comfort and soothing and mood altering. And so if that's not understood, connected with, and appreciated for what it's trying to do for us, then another part trying to get us to stop is only going to end up actually strengthening the force of the part trying to give us that soothing. So it's really, really difficult to just go in with a goal and then, you know, beat ourselves into submission, because eventually it's like the whole thing, for every diet there's a binge. One part says we're going to diet, somebody else says yes, but not any longer, because now I need to comfort her or him, and we're eating a donut because that has become associated with feeling a relief from whatever it is discomforting us at that time.
Which is why a lot of times I know these weekend workshops or a seminar, which is in these 10 take these 10 steps and you will change your life forever. And and then there's the idea of the baby steps versus the idea of make sweeping changes. And so anything that's externally imposed is not really going to be effective if you haven't done some inner work on who's saying, no, we're not stuck, we need more time, we're not ready to do this yet.
Exactly, so, right? Exactly. And that's where it takes being able to get to know, say in this case, both the parts that want to stop smoking and the part that's having difficulty with that. And often we don't know the part that's having difficulty or initially or over time has cultivated that as a soothing behavior, so that it kind of, and also because often these parts we go after, you know, the managers go after them and try to, you know, change again, diet or, you know, exercise or whatever we're going to do. The parts that need to be able to do this soothing will kind of hide out in our unconscious. And so that's why we can wake up in the morning and say, I can't believe I did that again. And we can actually at times feel victimized by that and feel like, what? That's not me. That's not what I want. Why am I doing that? And we talk about self-sabotage and all this, but it's actually not. It's a part that says this is something that you need, or doesn't say it to us that quite that way, but it's that idea that we are experiencing a part trying to help us, But since we don't understand it, we end up criticizing or judging it or trying to control it. And it just creates this fight, this dilemma. And so, unfortunately, you know, in, say, the addiction process, it gets stronger and stronger. The more people, and, you know, I've worked with lots of people with this, the longer they've been trying to quit something, the stronger it's gotten.
Because, in other words, it's just like that war on drugs, and it's just like anything
right.
that you're fighting,
yes.
you actually make stronger.
Exactly.
So when there's acceptance,
yes.
that's
yes.
really what you're saying. When there's acceptance and you say, oh, okay, I understand that this is a part that's soothing me. So then do you try to find another behavior that's maybe healthier to replace the soothing? How do you get everybody on board so that you can make some healthy changes in your life?
That can be a way to work with that. It kind of depends. Actually, if someone really does the work to get to know the part that's trying to soothe, say, through food or you know, and even drugs, and then we want to be able to certainly acknowledge that there are physiological cravings and addictions that occur that are no longer just coming from a part. They have now become physiologically embedded, so it is deeper. But the still, in order to shift that, we need to know what, say, originally began and now what behavior's been doing for the person. So smoking often turns out to be the one time someone who's very busy and very driven gives themselves a break. They go out and back and they take a smoke. And they have conversation with someone that they enjoy, and they have that, you know, happens every morning at 10 o'clock. And it really is meeting a need. And so to let go of the smoking is going to mean that that need's not met. And the system is, their system often is going to protest.
It's kind of funny because really what you're saying is the harder we are on ourselves, the
yeah.
more difficult it is
yeah.
to change.
Exactly. So acceptance to me is, I mean, it's an incredible word, and, you know, to experience it is quite amazing. But it is actually a key to change, because change and, you could say, evolution and unfolding and the development of consciousness or whatever words we want to give to it, this process of developing and becoming more whole is natural. And it's happening, except when obstacles get in the way. And one of the obstacles is this internal dilemma and these debates and polarizations inside that take a lot of our energy. And because they don't get resolved, we feel defeated. And then we, you know, try to start again, and then we get defeated again. So the really challenging work is, one, to work to get to know the part that wants the change, and to really understand what it's scared is going to happen if this doesn't happen, to really explore that and hear from that part its concerns and what's motivating it, so that then you can ask it to just give you a little space to get to know the part that's offering this behavior that perhaps you want to change. And then if you can make the space, you can actually get to know what is it that that's doing for you. And journaling is an incredible way to explore that and get to know that and kind of witness it. If you can make the space with the part that's trying to get the change to happen, and you can hear the one that is trying to soothe, you can actually literally get a dialogue almost going in a journal and come to know what is that part trying to do for you, and what is it concerned is going to happen if that is eliminated. What needs to happen for that part to feel that it could maybe just a little bit shift its behaviors? But that's done like with the sense of a caring parent asking a child to make a shift in something in just a very gentle, understanding, accepting way. There's no judgment or harshness or, you know, pushing of power or authority, but a sense of, can we work with this? Can we be with this in a way that you feel cared for and supported, and you'd be willing maybe to just try this out?
Oh, that's beautifully said. If you've just tuned in, my guest today is Caitlin Stecker. Caitlin is a licensed clinical social worker, and we're talking about change, about the actions, attitudes, and rituals that support change. So, Caitlin, in your practice, what are actions, attitudes, and rituals that you have seen which have been effective to help people make positive changes in their lives? And I'm assuming people typically always want to make a positive change, not necessarily a negative change.
Right, well,
there's
yeah,
a judgment
depends
there.
On
we,
who's,
sometimes
yeah.
we don't know, right?
Right, yeah. We don't, you know, it depends on who's deciding that.
Exactly.
But that, and I get one say, given that too, that sometimes one of the things we experience, not even just internally, the resistance or the protest, but often people around us when we make change feel disquieted and uncomfortable or, you know, disturbed by our change. Even if, you know, they love us and they want us to have, you know, whatever it is that we're working toward, whatever, it may cause them to have to make some adjustments that they didn't sign up for. And to acknowledge that and work with that, because many people do at times let go of something because the people around them have really given them the feeling that it's not working for them. And so being able to really acknowledge that and dialogue about that is really helpful and important too. So for me, first, it's an internal process of exploration. It's being able to really look at, again, what's happening, what's motivating, what are the needs being met by this that I'm saying now I would like to do it differently. What am I going to need to tend and take care of? Again, to me, if you can work with it with the idea that there's a young child, it's a very, in some, often in ways, very primal, especially these oral addictions. You know, often are meeting very primal early needs that we're not even consciously aware of, and we're not thinking, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. But there's something that's needing to be connected with.
I know that I actually see that example. I have a friend, and just food is huge for her. She has to eat, and food is always on her mind. And I always think she's hungry for something else in her life. It's not the food. There's some other hunger inside.
Yes.
And I know there are wonderful books and resources to help people. And certainly there are obviously action steps people can take. There are rituals they can use. What are some of the things that we can offer to the listening audience? I know that for me, David White is a poet, a W-H-Y-T-E, that I love him. And he says, you know, sometimes we try to force change when things have not yet woven together in the way in which they're meant to have woven together, and the time is not exactly right. So then we flog ourselves and we push ourselves. But then there are other times when people say, well, I now am going to make a New Year's resolution that I'm going to do X, or gosh, it's my birthday, and now I'm going to get up every day and I'm going to exercise at 6 a.m. and then suddenly you fall apart.
Right. So again, you know, when if people get, you know, one thing from this, I hope they'll get the idea to be curious about who's deciding about this change and where's that coming from and how is it being it's like, how's it being connected with internally? And are there parts that aren't on board with that? And what do they need in order to consider this as a possibility? So again, I would say, you know, certainly the journaling is an incredible way of getting to know all that. The other thing is just being able to find one small thing, the smallest. There is a work. What is it called? Teeny steps. Anyway,
Kanzen or something. Yeah, in Japanese.
Little teeny. There's a process called tiny steps. Anyway, and I think you can Google it. And what they suggest, which is brilliant, because we often do say, okay, and now I'm going to exercise 45 minutes, and then I'm going to walk, and then I'm going to only eat vegetables, and I'm blah, blah, blah. So to take one little thing, like have one vegetable more a day than you've been having, just one little thing. The littler, the more acceptance often there is in the system, and the more you get a chance to experience, okay, if that doesn't happen, what's gotten in the way? But it's not such a huge project that now your whole life is, you know, upside down. So we know through brain neuroscience that if we do something 21 days in a row, that it will change the neural circuitry in our brain, that we'll literally have an option now, a riverbed that we can go down that wasn't there before. We'll have a choice that we never had before. So taking one small thing and doing it for 21 days gives us a capacity to possibly shift other patterns and other ways of being that can be very, very impactful. Again, the little step is also being respectful of our system and not saying somebody's going to come in and just totally remodel the house. But instead, somebody's going to look and say, well, how about if we paint this one wall, you know, and just see how that looks. And often parts that are having concerns about the big change are able to tolerate that a lot more. And then you can also, you'll find what, again, what gets in the way of that, that you can take care of and listen to. So acceptance, I wanted to say, when you're saying, the thing about acceptance is that if we really can experience ourselves fully in the moment and get to a place, which just takes a lot, this is what I work with in myself and with my clients and with everybody I know, that sense of being able to just be with ourselves as we are and say yes. In that moment, it's like we are in the flow of life and change will naturally happen because it is natural. I mean, change is the only thing we can count on. And so that sense of acceptance actually allows us to tap into the natural energy of change.
People want to direct change, though. They want to say, of course, you know, you have the film like The Secret, and you have people like, you create your own reality, everything, you know. So if you just do it hard enough and you just, you know, do this enough, and then that doesn't always work out, though.
Right, right.
And again, it's because you're not, you know, you have to be in harmony
right.
inside.
Exactly.
For external change to yep. really be able yep. to be lasting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, one of the things, I mean, we, in our culture, we do a lot of things where we think if we put people into different situations, you know, treatment centers, whatever, that, you know, the good news is that if somebody does go into, say, a treatment center, there's a good chance that their system may actually develop the sense of being able to embrace a change because they get the support with what, again, often now, a lot of, say, alcoholism and drug treatment is about relapse prevention, recognizing that it's going to be the living it afterwards that is the huge challenge. And then how do people get the support and the help for that?
So what are some actions people can take? How can they, we've already talked about attitudes
mm-hmm. yep.
and being mm-hmm. curious to mm-hmm. know what's going on mm-hmm. inside ourselves.
Yep. Yep.
What are some actual actions? You've talked about journaling.
Yep.
And what are some rituals that people yep. can take?
Well, one of the things is that if you are able to develop and understand some of the beliefs that are holding whatever you're wanting to change in place, like say, if there's a sense of I'm not enough, or I don't matter, or if I'm not able to feel that I can be okay the way I am in some way. If you can do something physical, if you can actually find a way to take that belief, and if you're ready to release it, if you're able to work with the parts that have been holding that belief and release it, you can do a burning bowl ritual. You can go down to the ocean and you can literally just sound it out into the ocean. You can have a chance to, you know, write it out and put it in a balloon and helium up into the sky. Well, don't do that one. That's not good for the environment. Forget it.
No, but
anyway, but
yeah,
something.
Yes.
Yeah. But finding some way to put the idea of the shift into action. The body really likes and responds to the action. It says, oh, something actually changed.
So it's not just all this talking, because I think
right.
that's what you're saying.
Right.
It has to be, it's a visceral
yep.
thing. It has to be in your body.
Yep.
And you can actually do something physically.
Yep.
You have to do something physically, which
yep.
is a signal
exactly.
that we are shifting something here.
We also know through neuroscience that we are ritual beings and our brains are hardwired for ritual. So they like, our brains like things that we do in action that have to do with the kind of life we want to have. So having ways, again, that say in the morning, we take a moment, and one very powerful one is taking a moment, 1 minute, 60 seconds, to look in the mirror and really look at ourselves and say, I love you.
Yes, I love you. I love you, and I accept you exactly yes. as you are. Which yes. is, which of course, then you have all of the things that say, no,
exactly.
you're not perfect enough.
Exactly.
You haven't done this. You haven't
done
that.
That's right. You know? So that's right. It gives you access through that to what is it that's in the way of that.
Of that surrender that, and love.
Yeah.
And I know there are some wonderful books.
Yes.
The book that you gave me, mm-hmm. which I love very much, and which Lucy's Books has now, is okay. Outrageous Openness, Letting the Divine Take the Lead by Tosha Silver.
Yes.
That's an amazing book. I've been reading some. I read that every day. They're tiny little, like, two-page chapters, and so helpful. Tell us some of the other things you would recommend to the listening audience about tools and things to help support change.
Yeah. Well, again, I think the idea of a small action, the smallest thing that you can find, which is so different than what our culture and what we get into, and again, being able to be very tender with ourselves about it. So that process in itself, and just watching, I would say if somebody hasn't done this before, experiment with it. Of the 21 days, mark it on the calendar and let yourself know how the experience is kind of landing in your system and what needs to be tended. Look for the obstacles to the change you want to make. What is it that would get in the way of that? But especially like what I said, find the needs that are being met by the behavior as it is right now and find the connection with that part so that you can literally develop new ways of meeting those needs. But that hopefully comes from your whole system. So actually, Tosha Silver also has a book, Change Me Prayers. And it's about the, as she says, the subtitle, The Hidden Power of Spiritual Surrender. Because I would have to say that with all that we've talked about, probably one of the most powerful change agents is surrender.
And forgiveness. Forgiveness of others and self.
Yes. But Bill W. knew this when he created, along with Jung and others, the Alcoholics Anonymous program, that the surrender to the actual reality of the powerlessness that we have in our life is a powerful, powerful influence on our experience of being able to literally be all of who we're meant to be.
And that is the opposite of what Western culture says, which is
right.
you are in control. You make everything happen.
That's
you
right.
need to get on it. Do
That's
it, do
right.
it, do it.
Exactly.
And so this is a very different way of looking at how we make change in our lives.
Absolutely.
Any last thing you'd like to say, Caitlin? We're out of time. We could talk for many hours about this subject, and there's so many resources.
I do highly recommend Tosha Silver and the Outrageous Openness, but particularly the idea of the God Box. We didn't get to talk about the God Box, but creating something where if you want help, if you want support, if you want to make some big change, then offer it up to whatever word you use for something greater than us, the mystery, spirit, God,
the divine,
whatever it is. And put it in the box. And again, if for 21 days, every time you think about that or want to try to, you know, mobilize some big change process, you think it's in the box. I've given it. I've offered it.
And now I don't have to worry about it and put all my that energy.
Right.
I trust that it's tin that's in the God, but the divine box, whatever it is.
And then your job is not to be passive, but to look for the signs and to be able to work in your own system with that sense that you have offered it up. And that is a courageous, powerful action on behalf of oneself.
Oh, Caitlin, thank you so much. I so appreciate you being here today. And
let's
do another program because you have all this stack of great books.
Yes,
you have so many resources. Yep. We should just do one on what are our favorite books and resources and poems.
Yes.
There are so many.
Yeah, yeah.
So
absolutely.
We'll do that again. Thank you again so much for being here.
Thank you,
and
Donna,
for all the healthy, happy change that you make in the world of so many.
I say that about you, too.
Oh, thank you. And Terry Wilson, thank you. Yay. Mm-hmm. Being our engineer extraordinaire. And I want to express my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Brunn for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. That relaxes your body. That is such a healthy thing to do. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug. Focus on those things which are working well and be grateful to yourself for being uniquely you. You're the only one on this planet. You're doing the best you can. And hug yourself. Give yourself love today. And thank yourself for being here now in this only moment which exists, the now moment, on the amazing planet we call Earth.